This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Okay, topic of the week is one that I have been mulling for months and trying to figure out how to get a grip on this and how to talk about it. Hopefully we've reached some resolution. The topic is political correctness. We have the most interesting cast of characters here to talk about it. Steve Kraft is a retiree.
Recent retiree,
right. Former newsman at Fox 10 for like almost 30 years, was it?
34 years. Wow.
Started as a mere child.
Yes, yeah. As a mere pup.
Yeah, well, he is now unconstrained by the dictates of formal employment, and so you get to hear what he thinks.
Yeah, after all this time, I can be upfront and honest.
We can have
fair and balanced.
You can have opinions.
I can be fair and balanced with you guys.
Okay, Jeline Lissay has been a guest here many times on the Think Tank. Happy to have you back as well. As has been Don Pennick Thacker, who is probably most well known in this community as the spokesman for Save Our Schools, but she's also a professor of where her specialty is rhetoric, and that is very much relevant to the topic. Let me start up by, I looked, and actually you chuckle at the source. It's Wikipedia, but there's an excerpt that I thought I got to start with a definition. Okay, so what is it? And I thought that there's an excerpt here that I thought captured it. Since the 1980s, was different before, the term has come to refer to avoiding language or behavior that can be seen as excluding, marginalizing, or insulting groups of people considered disadvantaged or discriminated against, especially groups defined by race or sex. However, in public discourse and in the media, it's generally used as a pejorative, a negative term, implying that these policies are excessive or have gotten out of hand. I think that's a reasonable start, but from a rhetoric perspective, I wonder if you could comment on that. What are we talking about here when we say politically correct?
Well, I think that you know, what this whole conversation really boils down to is, do the words we use matter? And, you know,
I'm guessing the answer is yes.
Well, I think it's yes and no. I think that any of us would say that, you know, if we understand what the other person is talking about, then the precise vocabulary that they're using may or may not be the most important thing. But that precise vocabulary is really a means of value signaling. So when you choose to use words or refuse to use certain words, it's less about that word and more about what your values are that are informing your avoidance or your sense that, you know, I need to be this label and not that label.
Give us an example.
Here in Arizona, you know, are they migrants? Are they illegals? Are they undocumented? Those words.
Same people, very different connotations.
Absolutely. And so we all know what we're talking about when people use any of those words.
And when you choose a word, I also know what your attitude towards the issue is.
Exactly. So that word is really just a symbol for a much broader philosophy, ideology, your values as a human.
One of the things I think that has whipsawed a lot of people is changing standards and a lack of clarity about what's okay. Jeline, you wrote an interesting piece. You had two colleagues that you worked with. One was black, the other was African American.
Oh, you're talking about, yes. So I wrote a post yesterday. This was 20-something years ago. Mm-hmm. But I was working with a corporation here in town with two different divisions, and we were actually doing diversity work. And on one side, when I used the word African-American, I was immediately, you know, chastised, basically saying, please, you know, never call me African-American. I am black. I'm not from Africa. I'm from here.
And the way you wrote it, at least it came across, indignity.
The other one especially was, and then on the other side, she said, when I said, black, she said, she goes, that was the one that was really very much raised voice, everything mm-hmm. else. Never call me black. I'm from, you know, look at my skin. I'm a shade of brown. It's not black. I'm from Africa, you know, Africa. African-American is the only term. Same company, two different divisions. Ironically, when I wrote that post, somebody had actually worked for those two women that, you know, and actually remembers that being part of the culture of that company at that time. And the complexity of the culture. And what I talked about there is, you know, my question on my post was, well, who's right? Well, there is no right, right? It's all about preference. And it's about what makes us comfortable. And we have to be, but what we're losing, I think, in our society right now is the ability to comfortably make a mistake. I mean, because it's not even, I don't know if mistake is too big of a word. It's okay if you get something wrong for somebody else, as long as we can have a conversation about it. It's when we get put, when we assign intention behind that, well, you must be this if you said this, that people start to get up in arms. And that's what I see a lot of.
On both sides. And I see this is also where a lot of the I'm trying to find the right word here. It's not really.
You're trying to be politically correct.
Well, yeah. the word I was going to use is perpetrator, but that kind of has a negative,
right,
negative
right.
tone to it. I don't know. The speaker, at least, okay, is trying to be appropriate in both cases. And you could see somebody walking away from those two conversations, throwing up their hands and saying, you know, I can't do anything right.
Right.
You know, and just, you know, kind of reject the notion of that, you know, I'm not politically correct is you can see how that response can emanate from having had those two conversations.
Well, and you know, and Don just brought something up that I thought was really great when you start talking about the values, like really what's the values driving behind, you know, how we have conversations. And back in November, I took our family to Africa, to Kenya. And my significant other was really struck because he gets so angry watching the news and we can have huge debates. I mean, it actually raises cortisol levels and aggression and everything in our household just listening to how news can be portrayed. And he was shocked listening to the news, actually CNN, even in Kenya, because people spoke respectfully. There was no intention to put anybody down, to put people in boxes. And one thing I love about just the African culture, it was hard for me when I first started working in Africa, is that nobody wants to be disrespectful. That drives that value of wanting to be honoring and appreciative and supportive of whoever you're speaking to drives everything. So no one, in fact, no one will tell you no. They'll say things like, well, maybe you'd like to do this instead of this. I mean, there's an honoring.
Sometimes it can be very even hard to understand. I've had some communications with Africans who basically you get this flowery kind of over the top language. And you're trying to get to what's really, I think,
right.
I think somehow beneath all this wonderful flowery language, I think there's a no in there somewhere.
Well, it's about the value. I mean, yeah. It's about, yeah. And I think that's part of the conversation. Do we want, are we focusing on how we, you know, what words we use or what is the intention we want to bring into our relationships and in our conversations with each other?
But
well, I want to know what
I think we can't be though. Naive that there are some people who intend to cause, you know, to provoke or to yes. cause harm.
Absolutely.
And sometimes hiding behind the reaction of others where there's an honest, you know, bewilderment.
Right.
Why don't we just really get right to the nut of this?
Go to it. Tell right. us what you really think. There's a chance,
I worked at the street level for a long time, and I'm not an academic, and I was pounding the pavement and wearing out shoe leather and all that kind of stuff. There isn't much shoe leather anymore, but I was wearing out Nikes for a long time. And I think that just take the example of the Trump phenomenon, and he has a very, very large following around the country. Those folks that I ran into a lot, and I'm not speaking scientifically, I'm speaking anecdotally, my personal experience, talking to a lot of people for a long time. A lot of people use that term political correctness because they're, I think, deeply frustrated. I think one of the phenomena undergirding the Trump victory was racial resentment. And I think that's a lot of people were just sick and tired of Barack Obama and all the folks he brought along with him and that whole coalition. They banded together. That's the core of the Trump support. And I think that political correctness is their frustration with the fact that they can't really let folks know how they really feel.
You've left us with a wonderful hook. We'll return and we'll pick up that discussion. We return just a minute in the Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We're back. We're talking political correctness with Jalene Lissay, Don Panic Thatcher, and the unrestrained Steve Kraft, who had just left us with a little stink bomb at the end there.
That's called a tease.
Well done. Well done. You basically had suggested a lot of Trump supporters, and I think this is true,
some
are kind of – they're feeling – you know, whatever I say, it's well, you say, A, it's a racial resentment. And there's really kind of two interpretations here. And they may both be true of different
not that
groups.
The people are racist and that not that they don't have friends who might be minority members. They probably do. It's just when we're talking about the big picture, they feel that their place in society is threatened.
Mm-hmm.
And the way things were, make America great again. What does that mean? When was America so great? Really, you talk to folks, it was great like before all this stuff happened, this big change.
Which means civil rights.
Civil rights and affirmative action.
Women's rights.
Women's rights. Gay rights.
World changing.
Yeah. Gay rights. I mean, you name it. And all of a sudden, now you can't piss people off the way it used
and
to be.
And I used to make $75 an hour with my eighth grade education on the line.
Right. And the good old days, the Rat Pack, the early 60s, when we had it made. You know,
as
those
the
days
song said, when men were men.
Right. And I'm not saying that, you know, that everybody feels that way, but there is. There were a lot of Trump supporters, the core supporters, and I went to a lot of his rallies. Those were, I'd say, when were those days so great? When was America great? You know, back when? Well, when was that? It kind of is like maybe 1962, maybe, for a lot of these folks.
Before disruptive social change.
Right. And they have plenty of money. A lot of these folks are retired. It's not like they're poor and worried about their jobs. Some of the Trump support was that, but a lot of it wasn't. A lot of them had more money than the average.
Post-World War II. But the economics behind it, post-World War II, starting in 1945, for 20 years, we owned the world.
And the world has turned.
And everybody did well, and you didn't need a good education to do very well because Europe was destroyed. Japan had yet to be built, and
but guess who
everybody bought America.
But guess who wasn't part of that? African-American people weren't participating in that. Gay people were marginalized. Latino people were – their rights were trampled upon routinely.
Yeah.
Now that's not cool anymore.
It was whites and it was men and
– It wasn't – yeah, it wasn't women either.
Who are the core of the Trump constituency.
I feel that's true.
I think that this sense of loss, even if it's a loss of a fantasy America that never truly existed in the way it does in memory, ties directly, to this political correctness, this use of language. So I don't have my job anymore. I don't have my priority as a white male
actually,
in society anymore.
Actually, if you're talking about the Trump phenomenon, by and large, they're above average. But they are perceiving that their kids won't have that level or they're looking to the future and it doesn't look great.
There's a lot of,
even though they're doing okay right now.
What they have left is their language, right? What I have left, what you can't take away from me is what I call you or you or you.
Mm-hmm. And why should I have to feel so embarrassed every time I'm just trying to express myself? Why is it suddenly so incredibly uncool for me to say what I want to say? And that's the
and you take somebody of that mindset who experiences the exact thing that you described, Jalene, where you're encountering two people and you're to one you're saying black, another African American, and it's like whatever I say, it's not right. And this is another element, I think, and you feel like you're walking on eggshells, and you throw up your hands and you say, you know.
I think we're convoluting a couple of things. Though,
I thought they are two different.
Because what I heard, because I spend a lot of time, I mean, a lot of my clients, I work a lot, I won't say which industry, but it's a lot of people who typically have a high school education, right? Spend a lot of time in places like West Virginia, Kentucky, all over the country. And I'm seeing it a little bit differently than how you described it, Steve. What I see is that what people are angry at, it wasn't so much President Obama coming into office. It's a lot of our policies tend to swing a wide pendulum. We go from one extreme to another extreme around policy. And those policies then have an immediate impact on people. One of the big ones that I know and this happens predominantly in California, but it's also other parts of the country that I hear over and over again from people who are close to me. I didn't actually believe it at first until I did more research. But a very simple policy on child custody issues has swung the pendulum so far that men have many men feel like they've lost their rights. There's the suicide rates for men who have lost custody of their kids because the pendulum swing has gone so far. They can't afford the child support. All these different things that have happened. Those are things that I see people really, really angry at, and they see them as liberal policies.
And a lot of those folks, some of whom are struggling,
have been, Claudia, you talk about the use of language, they got classified as quote-unquote deadbeat dads, which is
and white males, just being called, and then being the word privilege
is
for so many of the men that I work with in my profession.
Who do not feel
objectively. Who don't understand. And also, again, if we're talking about education levels and everything else, who the concept of systemic, right, privilege as a system does not apply to them because the system has actually destroyed their lives. Right. So
you say,
they
you
get
call
very,
somebody like that privilege. You just
and they get so get angry. And so that's what they're rebelling against. It's the policies. And then there becomes faces for those policies, because it's not fun as a human being to get mad at a policy. We have to apply a face or a human being that we think is responsible for our misery, because it's better to then attack.
Well,
immigrants are the
I don't doubt you. I don't doubt that. But at the same token, there's plenty of research that shows that the Trump voters as a group had more money than the national average,
yes,
for one thing.
That's
and
true.
Then
that's
to
true.
Tease this out further, imagine that Barack Obama was a white guy. How does the equation change? I mean, that is a factor.
I'm not disagreeing with what – I mean, I was just trying to put a little – like pull a little bit out from that in terms of – because I'm not talking about those with a lot of money. I'm talking about those who go to those rallies in Kentucky, in West Virginia.
Right.
I mean, places where I spend an enormous amount of time. You know.
Just closing thought. Interesting. I think you're agreeing in part. You say – Jalene says, you know, if Barack Obama being black can be a symbol of – that puts a persona on it. If my status is diminishing, and now all of a sudden I look around and there's these other elements that are running the world. We will be back after the break in the think tank to pick this up.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We're talking about political correctness. Steve Kraft, now new retiree here, Jalene Lissay and Don Penich Thatcher, all participants. I want to ask Jalene the question for no particular reason, but I look at the Me Too movement and I see some parallels in that both the political notion of political correctness and the Me Too movement both has – in either case, there's behavior or words that have been out of bounds. Always and nothing. But then there's a kind of shifting sand of stuff that seemingly was okay at one point that seems not to be okay now. I wonder if you'd comment on that.
So that's a pretty broad.
Yeah. I mean, am I off base saying that there's a parallel here?
Well, I'm trying to look at where you yes, have things changed? Are things that happened before that were seemingly acceptable no longer acceptable? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Is that the right thing? Absolutely. Where I look at the pendulum, and you know, I'm always worried about the pendulum's moving too far.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm concerned that, you know, if we take what happened recently with, you know, former Vice President Joe Biden, are we moving things too far? Does it, you know, do people have a right, and should women always come out? And I think most of us, I'd be surprised to find a woman who didn't have a Me Too movement or moment in their lives, right? I've had several myself, some that have actually cost me considerable money.
I in discussions that I've had with women on that, I think some of it is a lot of it is definition. Because I've had conversations with women who said no, and then they would say, "Well, there have been, but that was not. I just blew that off. It was nothing."
You know? Well, I mean, there have been. I mean, I think people have had significant. I mean, it depends on what we're really looking at. But I think that where I get concerned about what's happening and where I see some of the parallels is that, and I guess this goes more into going back to what Don was saying in the very beginning, how values drive a lot of our conversations and our behaviors. And it's about maybe we're being invited as a country right now to look more at our values, that when I look at what's happening around Biden, for instance, did the women have every right to be offended and feel disrespected, if not even just disempowered? Mm-hmm. Because when you have someone of power putting their hands on you or anything else, it can be a very disempowering feeling. Absolutely. And should they have should be able to have that addressed? Absolutely. But then there's also intention. And when I hear the media, as like, you know, yesterday on CNN, where they're saying, well, a person's intention should have nothing to do with it, it's only the impact that they have, that worries me. And that's where I see people being pushed back over to, if we're going to call it the Trump side, but, you know, to the more, you know, because people want to know that their intention, even if they make a mistake, is going to be recognized as well, right?
And I've heard people say, Senator Gillibrand was an example, no, the intention doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is the reaction of the person who's offended.
And that concerns me greatly, right? Because, you know, so – and there's a very big difference between rape and assault and
– but yeah, there's things that are just out of bounds that are
right. –
that really aren't me too. They're just – unacceptable, always have been unacceptable. But I think of the Biden situation. I think it's entirely possible that he's done that hundreds of times, and 99% of the time the women thought it was cute and affectionate, and that was it. And somebody, somewhere in that list, somebody's offended.
And or, you know, I mean, we don't know unless he's until he says what his, and I think he's been trying to say what his intentions are. You know, I mean, we have to, you know, I look at someone who also, because I've met him a couple of times in person, who I just, what I saw in him was someone who was trying to not be the big person, but be right there with people. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to bypass my security, you know, guards to come and be directly with you and shake your hand and look you in the eye and be with you.
That's all part of the
present.
That's
right?
Part of Joe.
Right. And so to do public shame, you know, where is that line? Where is the personal responsibility? I guess that's what I want to look at in our society, is that around political correctness, you know, the pendulum goes from one extreme to the other, and we're losing all forms of, to me, personal integrity and responsibility in how we show up. And people are just being polarized and taking sides.
Well, I think that personal responsibility also has to do with paying enough attention to the person you're kissing or hugging or whatever to see if or even directly ask for their consent in this. You know, I was speaking about the Me Too movement to a group out in Gold Canyon Ranch, so a very affluent retirement community, not long ago. And one gentleman, probably in his late 70s, said, you know, I can't keep track of all this today. I mean, I feel bad for my grandkids. What are these young men supposed to do? Are they supposed to ask on a date, may I kiss you now? And
you know that's never going to happen.
Well, and that's an interesting reaction because actually the room was filled with young people. You know, it was a public event, so not just retirees, but also young people. And to a single one, the 20-year-old females in the room and the 80-year-old women in the room said, yes, that would be nice.
Really?
Yeah. And so I think it's just kind of a shifting expectations. So if we're going to have personal responsibility, I would just like it to be on both ends. So you need to speak up if someone is doing something to or around you that you don't appreciate. Speak up to them first, not just HR, but them as well. But also pay attention to the people around you and the way that you are impacting them. If you don't get a smile out of someone every time you comment on their looks, then perhaps that means you should stop.
Well, if you're – I guess the problem is that not everybody is as good at picking up subtle signs as others.
Yeah, well, we're socialized to be or to not be.
Ideally, you would, and this is a non-issue.
But I think, Don, what you're saying, what's important is to have the conversation. I mean, my biggest fear is that we're going to become robotic and cold, and the more we pull back, the more we can easily dehumanize the other. Which is what then leads to violence, conflict, war, and all that kind of thing.
I mean, the Joe Biden situation, you know, he's standing behind the woman, kisses her on the top of the head. There's no opportunity for nonverbal cues in that circumstance. They're facing the other way. My guess is it was something he did kind of habitually for just the reasons that you said.
Well, and I think where it becomes an issue is like where I have issue with the first, because there's been a couple of women who've said things, and both people have said, pro and against, Biden. But the one person who first came out and wrote the op-ed actually said very clearly, I did not think he was trying to be violent or sexual with me. Mm-hmm. So to publicly, to then use the media to publicly shame, is the intention to talk about male behavior, or is the intention to shame somebody who's running for office because there might be something else going, another agenda happening?
And what's being lost in all this is that, you know, Joe Biden has an incredibly tragic life story.
Yes.
Maybe, and that never comes out in any of this discussion. Mm-hmm. Maybe one of the reasons he's so touchy-feely is because he lost his wife and
family,
and a tragic car wreck, and then he lost his son to cancer, and it's been one terrible tragedy after another for this poor guy. maybe that's why he likes to sniff somebody's hair when he
If it wasn't an attempt, if he didn't deserve shaming, then what was the motivation?
Correct.
What was the issue here?
And that's the risk of any pendulum swing, political correctness, Me Too, whatever it is. Once we start moving into these directions, people take advantage, and they shouldn't, right? Because there's some very strong, real victims out there who need to have their voices heard.
But this could have torpedoed his entire presidential run, and it may well.
Well, there is a little underlying sort of theme now that has come out of this, and maybe it was even intentional, is, well, maybe Joe's a little too old, a little too out of it. This wasn't horrific, but maybe it just shows you that the time has passed him by. And that, for him, is a very dangerous theme.
He'll spend his entire campaign apologizing for something that he did the way he used to be.
Well, something about this that I think that's very interesting. Sometimes you see the folks, and Trump is probably the extreme example of this, never apologizing for anything, even things that are outrageous, and gets a lot of accolades as a result of that, as opposed to most of the Democrats that Beto O'Rourke the other day, seemed to be spending their life apologizing for stuff.
Well, this goes right back to political correctness, though, right? Because this is what's frustrating me right now on the liberal side, and I typically lean quite liberal. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing, as people explore the candidates running for president, is that the first thing that I see on the liberal side is people are looking at race and gender, right? And immediately I've seen people when they hear Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden, the first thing even before this
came out was
old white males. We are done with white males. We need a woman or woman, and especially a woman of color, which I think would be fantastic. But we're not talking issues. And the other side looks at issues.
The other side looks at that and is offended by the question.
They want, and they focus on issues and are willing to forgive the faults in the person's personality if they feel that their issues are getting addressed.
At the same time, while you would like to say we want the most qualified person, et cetera, when you have had 45 presidents and every one of them has been a male, you can hardly blame people for taking note of that and saying—
Well, the most qualified probably is a female, let's just be honest. But but that shouldn't be the driver. She's going to get elected because she stands out and she's really top-notch. Or race or whatever it is.
So who is this person that
I'm drawing a blank here.
Don't tease us. Is this Elizabeth Warren?
I'm just what I'm saying is that when she emerges or whoever it is, even then it's actually what should be driving her forward is her qualifications.
Of course.
I want to throw a curveball here.
Please.
No. We're running. We have not time to start something now. We will come back, however, and you can throw
Let me do the tease.
Okay, you can do the tease.
The people who are the most constipated when it comes to really telling you how they feel, ironically, are the younger people. It's the people who are 22, 23 years old who are tied up in knots over this. And
Don can answer, as the youngest person in the room, Don can answer that when we return for a final segment in the Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, back in the Think Tank. Steve Kraft, you left us with a tease. It was?
Well, I think that at this personal experience with three kids who were in their early 20s, the notion of political correctness, while in many ways it's a laudable thing, it's really good, and it redresses a lot of things that have been done poorly in our country for generations. And so that's all to the good. But a lot of young people are so careful about what they say, so worried about offending somebody else, that it ties them up in knots and they really can't express what they actually feel, which would further understanding, further debate, increase communication. But they're so tied up about it. They're so constipated about it, if I may use that word, that they can't really tell you what they think because they don't want to offend somebody.
You know, I think this goes to what you've been saying, Jalene, about the pendulum.
You teach people of that generation.
I do.
So, do you see that?
Okay, here's what I want to say about that. So we've heard a couple times about this pendulum swing, and I think that is part of this. So the younger generation, my students, are looking at their parents, their grandparents, and kind of embarrassed. You know, these are people who are willfully refusing to just use the language that makes someone else feel more dignified. And it's embarrassing, and they don't want to be like their parents in that sense, right? And so there's an overinvestment maybe in thinking about the feelings of others or how will my intentions be interpreted. And you know, does that make it more laborious to get, you know, an opinion out of them? Yes. But I think that if we're going to care about intention, and if the intention of younger people is to be conscious of the impacts of their language and their ideas on others, then that's a good thing. I think
so. What
we don't
should people
have...
do? How should they act? I think more discussion rather than less is healthy.
Absolutely.
Even if you anger somebody, as long as everyone's being frank about it and being honest and laying all their cards on the table, isn't that the
Yeah.
what we should be doing?
So in my line of work in rhetoric and communication studies, we refer to this stuff as excitable speech, provocative, that using politically incorrect words is actually a good thing if it allows us to engage in a conversation about the ideas, the values, whatever's behind it. But we have to draw it out. Yeah. I mean, as a teacher, I have to. As parents, we have to. And I think that, you know, the press, politics could do more to investigate that.
Before we finish, I want to amplify on something that Steve just said, which is that, you know, the excesses of political correctness are easy to turn into a punching bag. But let's remember the origin of this. There's a synonym for this, and it's called normal human courtesy. You don't use a word about a person or a group that they find offensive, okay? I mean, you go back a generation and a half, and the N-word was in common use, and it was excused. People would say, oh, yeah, you know, I'm just joking, right? And they're using the N-word in front of a black person and expecting them to just bite their lip and just go along with it. Polack jokes. I mean, the list goes on. And I think that because of the excesses, which are easy to – which are real – they're stupid, and but let's not forget what really we're talking about in its initial form is not talking about any person or a group in a way that's demeaning to them. Then we get, okay, on the other side, groups that are individuals that have gone that seem to many people, in some cases I think it's true, who are just out there looking to be offended. You know, you had a slip, that wasn't quite right. And all of a sudden, and you see how that has produced a reaction, which is, oh, my God, that kid there. I don't know what. There's nothing I can say without having somebody jump on me. Screw the whole thing. So how do we get out of this?
Well, you know, and I would just say that America has a unique opportunity to define how we get out of this, right? Because this whole conversation is taking me back to like the mid 1990s when I used to do a lot of work with the UN. I would go to all these different UN conferences, and I used to almost laugh at my Swedish colleagues and folks from different countries who would say, accuse of us of being so racist and all these things. And I'm like, yeah, but you're a homogenous culture. You don't have to deal with the issues that we deal with. Not anymore. And it's changing, right? When I worked in Europe around, especially in the Netherlands, around the Moroccan, you know, they're having a really hard time with the immigrant issues mm-hmm. there. But I can't say the word because I'm not a good, but heterogeneous, we're the only heterogeneous, whatever, society, you know, really in the world. I mean, now things are changing. But
well, very
we truly
much. Been
are.
To Europe. I mean,
but we yeah. truly yeah. are in our, I mean, for a lot longer. They're changing now, and now they're having issues. So we actually have the opportunity to really help navigate this path. But we need to. But what you're asking for is what's the way forward. So I'd like Don to say what's the way
Help
forward.
Help us. Lead us, Don.
Yes.
Lead us.
Well, Steve, I actually think, you know, we get so much from what we see performed for us on television, right? By our politicians, by our news anchors, by our pundits. And so, you know, it's about money, right? Like earlier over a break, we were talking about how President Trump gained so much of a platform because he's entertaining. We didn't stop and investigate whether we should be focusing on these, you know, these tantrums or these bad acts. Are they helpful to our conversation? And so I'm going to put this on the press. I'm going to say that for going forward, maybe in this next presidential run, we're going to do a little bit more work of what is the issue here. Let's pay attention to what are we talking about these things in a way that is dignified to
well,
the people
the
involved or just
in,
to get
when the viewers stop
ratings.
Oh, that's
turn it back
you're right. kicking the ball here.
I'm flipping it back like judo. when the viewers stop wanting to watch it, we're not going to run it. And
that's
not going to happen.
I mean, there's always a play. So we're going to have the Jerry Springerization of the news.
It's happened. Absolutely, yeah, it's happened. I mean, that's what, you know, until we have a BBC in this country, which I personally favor. Something like that.
But that's proof that humans can do it, right? The BBC example is proof that human beings can pay attention
to civil
discourse.
They can, but that would take people voting for it and the government doing that. We'd have to have NPR on a grand scale and have it on television and do it as well as the Brits do.
Well, and one thing that I think could also help at least in Arizona.
Not going to happen, you know that.
Not going to happen.
But in Arizona, what we could do is if we actually, because this is what really impressed me after the Parkland, Florida shooting, right, is the how amazing those kids were. They held the narrative. No matter who came after them and tried to bully them, mm-hmm. they were right on point. And I remember watching one of the debates, and their superintendent, either the principal or superintendent, basically said from starting in elementary school, every kid in that district learns debate. They learn speech and debate. My son is 14. He cannot take speech and debate until he's in high school. We're not really, I think that you guys have a responsibility on the news side, and then we on the education side, as parents, I'm a parent, you're an educator. We need to be really promoting in our schools the critical thinking, the speech and debate, and letting our kids have these conversations.
And remember, the First Amendment, because I'm originally a lawyer, says that we in our country, the very First Amendment to the Constitution, free expression, that robust marketplace of ideas, that is the underpinning of our entire society. We want more noise. We want more voices, not fewer.
But I want to come back to the question, because right now, when you talk of the issue of political correctness, it's not how not to offend. The biggest potent symbol of political correctness is the guy who says, I'm not politically correct. And most people at this point are cheering that. They're saying that they're feeling like the lot of sentiment majority. I think I don't know what to say. Last words, anybody?
You know, we didn't get here overnight, and it's going to take incremental collective action to get us out of it.
I think it's pretty simple. Just don't be a jerk.
Yeah.
I'm with that. Just
okay, folks.
Values the conversation.
The wisdom of the hour: don't be a jerk. Thank you very much, Steve Kraft, Jalene Lissay, and Don Pennick Thatcher. We could have gone, as always, in the better ones of these. Could have gone another hour. You can get a podcast of our show at ktr.com, and the older ones are all archived at mikeoneill.org. See you next week in the Think Tank.
Silver cities rise, the morning. Streets that lead them and sirens call them on.